Don't bring my name up, No Neck. I'm not the topic of your conversation today.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. As always, we're going to look at Wednesday's 9 games. We're going to head across to Thursday and preview the 4 games there for DFS. Going to answer the question of the day, and we're going to shine the player spotlight on the current Brooklyn Nets starting point guard, that is Spencer Dinwiddie. So we've got lots to talk about.
Let's get to it.
All right, Mr. Bolton, we will get stuck straight into it. The monstrous line of the night, no surprise, goes to Andre Drummond of the Detroit Pistons. 30 points for Drummo, 24 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 6 blocks, 11 of 17 from the field and 8 of 12 from the free throw line. If I was going to tell you what Andre Drummond's rank is in 8 category leagues for the last month, I'll give you 5 seconds thinking time to have a guess of it. There is no way that you would know that he is the 8th ranked player over the last month, averaging 16.5 points and 16.5 rebounds, but also 4.5 assists, 2 steals, and 1.6 blocks, going at 57% from the field and 66% from the line. So he is the 8th ranked guy, despite still being a decently significant negative in the free throw percentage. Now, it's not 39% like last year and unrecoverable from number, but still, in terms of standard score for that number in the month, it's negative 1.7. It's not an easy category to recover from. Yeah, you compare it, you go up against a Dwight Howard, a DeAndre Jordan, and you win that category with Drummond. But against most other teams, you'll still struggle there. But that just shows how well he is playing. And if you're in a punt free throw build, we're talking about this guy as a top 5 sort of player over the last month. For the course of the season, he's the 17th ranked guy at 14.5 and 15.5. 4 assists, 1.6 steals, 1.4 blocks, 55% from the field and 63% from the line. He has been absolutely sensational. We focus on the free throws because it's a huge improvement, but he's gone from 1.1 assists per game last year up to 4 a game. And as I said, 4.5 over the last month. That is big. He's somehow taken his rebounds from 14 a game to 15.5 per game. And his scoring's gone up a full point per game as well, while taking fewer shots. And I guess that's because of the increase in his free throw efficiency. His true shooting has leapt from 52 up to 57%. And in the last 6 games, he's at a 63% true shooting mark. At this point, we have to assume that the free throw shooting is real. This is what it's going to be, a 60 to 70% sort of a guy. The newfound playmaking, the steals have always been there for Drummond. They've eliminated some of his post-up stuff, which was really impacting his field goal percentage, so that's why we're seeing an increase there. And he's going back to being that beast we all thought he could be 2 to 3 seasons ago. Really great stuff from Andre Drummond. These numbers are great. We're seeing him stay on the court a lot longer. He played only 29.7 minutes per game last year. He's already at over 33 this year due to that septum surgery. It has been an absolute renaissance from Drummond. I had some decently high hopes for him heading into the season. Nothing to do with the free throw shooting. I had no idea that was going to change. And I had no idea that the assists were going to come up. But what I thought is they would reduce some of the post-ups and increase his field goal percentage efficiency. And I thought that he'd be able to play more minutes per game after that surgery. That stuff's come true. He's just added on a whole bunch of extra cherries on top to give you this really, really beastly fantasy guy, which is it's great if you're able to draft him because you're able to get him pretty bloody late. The waiver wire line of the night is also the young gun of the night because this man is in his second season in the NBA, and that is Fredels VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors. 19-7-5 for Fred. 4 triples, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. He was 6 of 9 from the field, and he hit all 3 of his free throws. That is a sensational performance. We're well aware of that. And you can look at his ranking, and this is why, look, when you talk about ranking, and I'm very much, like, I reference it often in the show, just as a reference number, but if you're just going things based on ranking, it can really screw you up and screw your team up. So you can look at this and look at his last 2 weeks and go, man, he's the 39th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. And you go, well, that means he's a must-own guy then. That's not necessarily the case. Yes, he is the 39th best player in that period, but He's shooting at 56% from the field and 61% from three. And we know that those two things have zero chance of holding. He was a 36% field goal guy last year. He's at 42% this year. Now, he is a decent three-point shooter. He was at 38 last year. He's at 39 this year. But he's bloody hell not a 61% shooter. So those things are going to come down. You can look at what he did in today's game, putting up two steals and three blocks. Look at this man, he's doing all the stuff that Dillon Wright should be doing. Well, that's fine, but for the rest of the season, he had seven blocks combined. So it is just one of those arsey lines. Now, I like what Federals can do. He can have these offensive explosions, but going for 19-7-5-2-3 is just an extraordinary performance that he's not going to be able to come really anywhere near to being able to reproduce at any point. It's not like he got big run, and that's one of the main things. Like, if he started playing 29 minutes, I go, shit, what's going on here? Why is he playing so many minutes? No, just the same, 19. He just added these weird defensive numbers. He hit his shots at an extraordinarily high rate, which he has been doing over these last couple of weeks, which has really bumped his numbers up. And yeah, that makes him an interesting source of threes for the short term, as he's averaging 2.8 over the last five games. That's nice. 14 points, also nice. But they're not things that we can rely upon. We can't rely upon that level of efficiency, which has been his number two category over those 2 weeks. Threes at number one and field goal percentage at number two. We're not relying upon that. I like what Van Vliet can do as a third string point guard. I think if he went to the Suns, he'd probably be an upgrade, or he'd definitely be an upgrade over, say, Isaiah Cannon or Tyler Ulis. I could see that being the case. But he's not a guy that you look at, you know what, he is our point guard of the future, or anything along those lines. He is already 24 years of age, so he's not a young guy in his second year. He's been around a little bit, you know, coming out of college a little bit later. So he's not like this super young guy that's taking these steps forward. And he has looked better, and he has been improved this season. And him and Dillon Wright were one of the reasons why Corey Joseph was considered expendable by this Raptors team. But if we're just looking at it and going, well, 39th over the last 2 weeks, let's go grab Van Vliet, you're going to be, you know, getting him on the downswing of a crest as that shooting drops back off, as the 61% from threes doesn't hold up, as the three blocks in a game doesn't ever happen again in his career. Those things will drop off. But, you know, brilliant sort of performances in this last time. He's a 16-team league guy. I feel okay about having him there just to get you some threes, get a steal, get three assists. That's valuable. And there's 14-team stream ability there for Freddles. But yeah, realistically, we're not considering him as a 12-team guy, despite the level of production that he did have in this game, which was undoubtedly good. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to Yusuf Nurkic of the Portland Trailblazers. 6-3 for Nurk. He had the 0-0. Zero assists, 2 of 6 from the field, and hit both of his free throws. He only played 20 minutes in this one. He got himself into some foul trouble. Had an elbow issue as well, an elbow contusion. We know he's been up and down. I'm not overly panicked about this, but his ownership is only 73% on Yahoo, meaning he's available on some waiver wires. It hasn't been the best year for Nurk, 105th ranked for the season, but over the last month, he's 67th. And in large part there, because he's got his percentages up. For the season, 47-67. The last month, 50-72, which are not crazy high numbers where you go, well, there's no way that's going to be able to continue. He hasn't been well known as a highly efficient guy, but yeah, 50-72 are not numbers that should be considered extraordinarily out of reach for Nurk in that time, averaging 14-9. With a steal and 1.5 blocks in 26 minutes. And that's a realistic expectation, you know, for him to continue along. Like, he could continue along those lines. He might not, but he could very well continue in a similar vein to that. The free throws are the biggest concern, I would say. Yeah, heading at 67% for the season. And if he goes at that level, then you're in punt territory. But if he gets it up to 72 over the last month, 83 over the last 2 weeks, then you're in a really, you know, much more solid territory with Nurk. And if he is on my wire, I would absolutely be looking and seeing, you know, where can I fit him? Can I deal with a potential relapse in free throw percentage? But everything else is pretty fine. I've talked about the injury risks with him. I've talked about the mental stuff with him and the lack of focus and the frustration that teams and organizations and coaches have with him. But for now, yeah, the minutes are okay-ish with upside there to push further forward into the top 50. And you know, the downside is, yeah, what happens? He gets hurt, or they take him out of the rotation and move him to a bench role, yeah, so they can put Ed Davis in, Zach Collins. I don't think either of those things are happening. So I don't think you're at significant risk of those two things happening. So if he's available, go and have a look and see if you can fit him in. I don't think he's going to get a huge contract next season, and I'm not 100% sure it's going to be with the Blazers. So he's going to be a really, really interesting restricted free agent next season, just to see exactly where it all goes down and where he ends up and what role it's in. So I'm not thinking that his dynasty value is through the roof or anything like that, because there's no guarantee he goes to a team where he is a 30-minute a game starter. He could go and be a 22 backup, a 24 timeshare sort of a player. He could go into many situations with his obvious issues and concerns and flaws. So I don't think his dynasty level is significantly high, but I think you can have another 2 to 3 seasons of him of top 100 type numbers. Let's go to question time. And today's question comes from, what's the person's name? It comes from Michael Fan, and he is on Twitter at MichaelBoo619. He says, if your fantasy playoffs are 2 weeks long, does it even matter to trying to trade for players with optimized playoff schedules? It's a really good question. I really do enjoy the 2 week playoff format because it does tend to even some of that stuff out. You're talking about, instead of over a 40 game sample for a week, you're looking at it over an 80 game sample, and a 6 game week versus a 7 game week, it's not as stark of a difference as a 3 game week versus a 4 game week. So a 3 game week versus a 4 game week, you're talking about, you know, 25% or 25% less in terms of games played. 7 to 6, you're talking about 14% less. Like it's a big, I think my math's about right on that one. So it's a much smaller chunk of the pie. Now there are certain circumstances, say for example, if your playoffs start on the 5th of March and you've got a Timberwolves player and it's a two-week setting, they play 2 games and they play 3 games. So you've got only 5 games from your Jim Butler and from your Karl Anthony Towns, whereas you flip over to the Pelicans and they have 8 games in that two-week period. So you're getting 8 games of Tone Davis, 8 games of Boog Cousins. And that 3 game difference is obviously, you know, much larger there. You're talking about, you know, 30-40% difference there. And that can be an issue. But a lot of the times the teams that play 3 games 1 week, they play 4 the next. And it does tend to even out more. There are still, again, if you've got those teams with those really small schedules, so in a two-week playoff, if they're playing 5 games, or if they're playing 6 games, and then you're comparing it to guys who have got 8 games there, then yes, there might be some value there, but it's not as much as like, oh, 3 games versus 4 games, like how's that going to impact me? The impact is not as large. And that's one of the reasons why having those 2 week playoffs tends to favor the better team most of the time, especially if you've got a games limit introduced in there as well or streaming acquisitions, and you can really, it helps the better team win the majority of the time. But it's not saying that, you know, trading for high playoff games guys isn't a good idea, because it still can be under certain circumstances. But say you're looking at a team like the Dallas Mavericks, who starting the 3rd of March, say you've got a 3 week playoff there, they play 3-3-3, right? Which is not ideal. Yeah, 3-3-3 there compared to the Rockets there, who have got 4-4-4, which, you know, that's a big difference there. So 1 game a week versus from a Mavericks guy versus a Rockets guy, you know, Trevor Ariza versus Dennis Smith, 3 extra games over 3 weeks. Yeah, can be interesting. But if it's a 2 week playoff matchup, then you're talking 6 games for Smith and 7 games for Ariza. It's just 1 game difference over a matchup, and it is more manageable, 2 game difference over the matchup. It's more manageable in that scenario. And when you compare it again to lots of these other teams, so these teams that play 4 games in that first week, then the next week they play 3 games. So it's 1 game split over 2 weeks difference instead of, yeah, 1 game over 1 week. So I think you can understand the difference there. That's my experience with it. That's the way that there is going to be always examples to that. And people have asked me plenty of times, oh, are you going to do a playoff schedule podcast? And the reason I'm probably not going to do it, I might talk about it a bit, is that everyone's playoff schedules are different. You have 2 week playoffs, you have 1 week playoffs, you have playoffs that start on the 26th of February, some that start on the 3rd of March, some that start on the 12th of March, some that start on the 19th of March, some that go to the end of the season, some that go to the 1st of April, some that go to the 26th of March. So I'd be covering things in many different ways. And you know, you can always check this out on Basketball Monster on the schedule grid and go through the weekly projections and stuff like that to work it out. But there's no one set playoff type thing. You need to do some of that research yourself, because I can't go through every single permutation of when playoffs are. Because again, Yahoo standard and ESPN standard are different. And I change all my playoffs from standard anyway, because I don't like when they finish. I want all mine finishing on that 25th of March is when all my playoffs in the leagues that I set up have finished, because I don't want anything running into April. But thank you for that question, Michael. It is a good one. Let's move on now and talk about these games in more detail. There were 9 of them on which day was it? Wednesday, that's it. Always get my days mixed up, you know that. The first game we're going to look at, the Phoenix Suns and the Indiana Pacers. Just smashing. It was really a day of smashings in the NBA. We had no Alex Len for Phoenix, so Greggy Monro, he was able to play once more. Now, yesterday when the Suns, or last time when the Suns played, we saw Monro started and they weirdly benched Tyson Chandler, saying, yeah, he was needing a day off. He was fatigued and went to give Monro a revenge game, whatever bullshit Triano was spitting out there. But we didn't know if it was going to stick. And then earlier in the day, say, no, Tyson Chandler will go back to starting. So, of course, yeah, we're not going to stick with that. Now, Greg Monro is clearly their best center. It's not even close, in my opinion. He is clearly their best center. But that doesn't mean that they're going to play him. But if you added him with that knowledge that it might not work out, you got a second game there. And let's just see what happens in the next one. Let's see if Alex Len's Achilles problem persists. Let's see if they run into a more regular rotation pattern with Chandler rather than playing him every game and then giving him the random night off against the Bucks. Monro had 16 and 17 in 29 minutes with a steal and a block, whereas Chandler only played 10 minutes. Now, he got into foul trouble, so that elevated Monroe's minutes. And actually, I'm talking about Greg Monro. I haven't even done this.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Yeah, pretty dangerous indeed. So look, just hold him. I don't have massive faith in it. Everyone's, he's going to get traded, he's going to get bought out. I'm not, again, I think that there is a less than 50% chance of those things happening. I think through a trade, there's almost 0% chance of Greg Monro getting traded anywhere at this point. Buyout, potentially, but you know, I don't really see him finding himself in a situation where he's going to stroll in and play 27 a night and become this difference maker. But if he's in Phoenix here and they decide to give him minutes, there is an opportunity there. So just hold. You see what happens over the next couple of games and you see how it all goes. Devin Booker only 26 minutes as they got their ass kicked. 19-6-4, while Joshie Jackson had 20 in his 25 and TJ had 10 points in 34 minutes. Dragan Bender started again in place of Marquise Chris and went scoreless. I like Bender. I say it all the time. He's not a good fantasy player, and he might not ever become one. For the Pacers, Vic Oladipo, 33 minutes, 21-4-9 with 3 steals. The Pacers were without Miles Turner. He was questionable before the game and then ruled out, while Daz Collison was out with a personal issue. They started Mighty Joe Young in place of Collison. He played 34 minutes and had 6-2-2 with 2 steals. We don't think that Collison's going to be out for a long period of time, so there's very little value there in Young, while Corey Joseph played 33 minutes and had 8-3-8. The 8 assists are nice from Joseph, but he is not a high-priority 12-team league guy anyway. Thaddeus Young, 22-3 with 3 steals. Really got his mojo back, I guess, over the last couple of weeks with Miles Turner back. So he's a strong holder. Bojan Bogdanovic had a strong game too, 17-7 with 3 triples, a steal, and a block. But at this point, I don't think there's any need to go and add Bojan outside of, say, 14 or 16 team leagues. Lancey Stevenson, 7-9-4 in his 22 minutes. Let's move on to the next one. It's the New Orleans Pelicans and the Charlotte Hornets. Boog wasn't able to repeat what he did against the Bulls. 16-13-5 with 5 blocks is still pretty bloody good. And Tone Davis had 19-6-4 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. And Drew Holiday continued his strong form, 19-5-4. The Rajon Rondo shitfulness express continued. 9-1-5 in 15 minutes for Rondo. That's 2 consecutive games of under 20 minutes. Those numbers are actually all right. And if you look, double them into 30 minutes and he had 18-10, you go, man, that is fantastic. He's just not good. And Elvin Gentry is really seeing this quite often. We're seeing way more of Darius Miller replacing Rondo, a little bit of Ian Clark, some Jameer Nelson and Drew Holiday playing at point guard. So I don't think there's any need to hold Rondo in 10s or 12 team leagues. Miller's a three-point streamer, a pretty reliable source of threes. He had two of them in his 31, or each one more. I think he's more of a 14-team than a 12-team league guy. Onto the Hornets, Dwighty Howard, 22-16 with with three blocks. That's a really nice performance. Well, Marvin Williams, 36 minutes. He'd really struggled to get any sort of big minutes at any point. He'd been putting up good numbers in limited playing time, but a 14-14 double-double with a triple-one in 36 minutes is interesting. I don't think he's a really high upside guy, but I do think he is a guy that you do want to own. Kemba had 25-7 with three triples. Well, Batum, a shit shooting night, 7 points on 8 shots. But why I like him as a fantasy guy is he contributes in the other areas. 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. That's what he can do. Makes him a more roto guy than a head-to-head guy. Maybe the field goal percentage can be tough to deal with, but I think that he is a clear must-own guy to me. Jezza Lamb had 8 points in his 24 minutes. So we move on to the next game. It's Utah against Detroit. Derek Favors only 24 minutes here as they went early to Jonas Jerebko. 8-10 for Favors with 4 steals and 3 blocks, so really bringing the defense. But the way the minutes are coming down with Gobert back is definitely a source of concern. He's not an automatic drop. He could get traded into a better position at some point. We know that that's a possibility. But if things continue along the same track that they are, it is going to be a hard hold in 12-team leagues. Rocket Rodney Hood was out, so Jingle and Joe started 13-1-7 with 2 steals. Since Hood's been out, Ingles has really improved his game. I think he's still got some 12-team league value, but he could comfortably be dropped if someone else appears. Well, ravishing Rick Rubio had the double-double. Not the double-double you're hoping for, but 11-10-5. In 37 minutes for Rick, again, just constantly just, he's just like standing behind you and flicking your ear and going, hey, remember me? Remember me? And saying, oh yeah, maybe he still can do something. One of the more common questions that I get is Ricky Rubio going to unleash in the second half of the season? Is he going to bounce back like we saw last season? I have very little hope of that. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think still at this current level, he can still be a useful fantasy guy. Like 11-10-5 with a steal is still decent. It's still usable. It's still 12 team. Now people go, oh, I picked him in the bloody third round. Well, I'm going to drop him because he's shit. At this point, if you drafted him at the third round, it doesn't really matter. If he's still providing you okay numbers in a punt field goal setting, and he's a top 100 guy in a punt field goal setting, in fact, he's a top 100 guy over the course of the season in just regular 8-cat value, then that's still providing value. Recently, the numbers haven't been as good, but 5 rebounds, 5 assists, over 1.5 steals with a 3 a game, an 85% from the line, that's nothing terrible to sneeze at. The question's always going to be, who's there on the wire? Who are you replacing him with? And how does your team look and what stats do you need? But he's not an auto drop just because you drafted him early and he's been shitful. And we know he has definitely not lived up to the expectations. Gobert, 15-8 with 4 blocks, while the Don Mitchell had 15-4-5, 2 steals and a block. The efficiency for Don is struggling. He was 1 of 6 from 3. He was just 6 of 21 from the field, and that was something that really bothered him at the start of the season. Went through this weird stretch where he was hitting pretty much every shot that he took, and it is starting to drop off again, and that's going to cause some problems with his rank. He is the 38th guy over the last month on 45% shooting. I have said plenty of times that I do think that he has got top 10 potential at some point. He's nudging up towards averaging 20 points per game already this season. He could be a 25-4-5.5 guy with 2 steals per game and 2.5 to 3 triples. I think that is an optimistic ceiling. But if I said that I thought that Mario Hezonja was going to do that, you could say, Josh, you're a dickhead. But saying that for Mitchell, you can always envisage that scenario and go, yeah, well, that could happen. Maybe it's a 10% chance of it happening, but it could happen. I had someone try and tell me today on Reddit, I don't know if you listen to this podcast, that he thinks Zach Collins is going to average 18-11-4-2-2. And I said, look, literally zero people have ever done that in the history of NBA. And he said, well, if anyone's going to do it, Zach Collins would. Now, to me, that's a little bit delusional. I don't think Zach Collins, maybe it was Zach. So shout out to you, Zach, if that was you jumping onto the Reddit AMA today. But if I'm saying that Mitchell can go 4 and 5.5 or whatever I said with 2 steals, I don't think that's an outrageous statement to make. I don't think that he's necessary. If I had to say, will he get it? I'd say no. But I think there is a huge chance of him being able to do that. And that's the difference between ways of phrasing things, I guess. Onto the Pistons. There was no Reggie Bullock with that thumb injury. Apparently, he was available to play, but they didn't expect him to play. So he was not in action in this one. But what I liked here was Luki Kennard. 26 minutes, a double-double, 10, 10, and 4. And Stan Van Gundy said that he did want to get him playing more minutes as the season goes on. Now, I'll trust Stan Van Gundy with rookies when I see it for a prolonged period of time. I think Kennard's really good. I think he's probably better than Bullock. I think he's possibly better than Stan Johnson already. And shit, he might even be a better option than Avery Bradley for a team that is in a free fall and Bradley is continually struggling and there's no way they should re-sign him next season. Giving Kennard 30 minutes a night would be beneficial. I just think there's no chance that that's going to happen. I've talked at length on this show, maybe not at length because I haven't player spotlighted him, but I have talked about Kennard, how I do like his fantasy game. I like his all-roundedness, and this is what you see here. 10 boards, 4 assists. He's not JJ Redick. He's not your white shooter. He can handle the ball. He can distribute. He can get up for the boards. He can play defense. He can do quite a lot of things, and I think he's got a pretty high ceiling at some point. If you're in a 16-team league, I'd be all about grabbing him now. If you're in a 14-team league, I'd absolutely consider it, because if Stan is true to his word and he plays him 27 a night, then he can get your value in 14s. In 12-team leagues, he'd probably need 30 minutes, and I don't think he gets there. Stan Johnson was back in the starting lineup. He had a Nick Batum-ish type line, 7-5-4 with a triple one. The shot is just, it feels like it's never going to go in with him. 25% from the field on 12 attempts. 39 minutes for Stan in the overtime game. I'd rather have Kennard in most cases. Toby Harris had 13 on a poor shooting night. Well, Ish Smith moved to the bench, but still played more minutes than Langston Galloway. I don't understand that move at all. 5-2-4 for Galloway, while Smith had 14-2-3 with 2 steals. I know Tony Jones, who covers the Jazz, was unbelievably critical of Ish Smith today. He said Ish Smith was playing for the Jazz. He cost the Pistons this game. I didn't see the entirety of this game, but I don't think Smith is a very good player. And I've said that plenty of times. He still has some value. And even coming off the bench, he still played his 33 minutes and put up okay numbers. But the shooting is a real problem for him. Despite some earlier decent shooting performances, it's not going to be a consistent thing for Ish. The Chicago Bulls and the Philadelphia 76ers, another blowout. So who else is going to thrive in blowout time? And that is Punchbob Shiploak, the biggest flat track bully in the NBA. 22-11 in 25 minutes for Portis with 3 steals, efficient shooting. We have seen him do this nearly every time you look at a big game from Portis. It's in a game that the margin is 15 to 30 points. That's pretty much the only time that he does that. Now, of course, if Nick Mirotic gets traded, there is an opportunity for him to get 25 minutes on the regular, assuming someone doesn't come back that plays that same position and is better than him, which is always a possibility. If you're in a decently good position, in a deeper sort of league, a 12-team league with an extra bench spot, a 14-team league, like adding Portis and seeing what happens with Mirotic is something that's worth looking at. But remember, nearly all his big games come on unsustainable efficiency, sky-high usage, and in large blowouts. Zach LaVine, big game from him, 21-7-3, 3 triples, 3 assists, 1 steal. He's still absolutely horrendous on defense, but in terms of his fantasy value, it's looking really good. Now, it's a huge usage rate and high efficiency. As his minutes push up, I imagine his usage does come down. He won't sustain a 33% usage rate the rest of the way. So you can look at, man, 21-9, 24 minutes, that means he's going to average 30 the rest of the way. I don't look at it that way, because I do think that as the minutes push, the usage will dip and you'll have some efficiency things that change there also. But he's going to have fairly consistent top 100 value. Jaren Grant started but was benched in the second half. He was just getting toasted by Benny Simmons. 7-1-3 for Jaren, while David Nwaba started the second half and had 10-5-4. I don't think that that's anything to be reading too much into. You're not going to have to match up against Benny Simmons all that often. So Grant, as long as Chris Dunn is out, should play more than 25 minutes, maybe 29 to 30, and be an okay 12-team league streamer. Denzel the Hammer Valentine, only 24 minutes in this game, while Justin Holiday was fairly putrid, 5 points in his 26 minutes, and the shot-jacking, shot-missing Justin Holiday was back, 2 of 11 from the field. Again, I don't find him a super strong hold in 12s. The Sixers, Ben Simmons, 19-17-14. That is a huge triple-double. Had 2 blocks as well. Went 7 of 10 from the line. He almost had a bloody double-double in the first quarter. He was putting up numbers like crazy. They said they were going to play him big minutes because Timothy John McConnell was out. They played in big minutes. He came through on Australian Heritage Night there in Philadelphia. Šarić was also great, 21-10 with 4 triples and a steal. His efficiency recently is through the roof, and he was at 67% here and 80% from 3 numbers, which of course won't sustain. Well, Bobkov, 16-4-5, 4 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Big numbers from Covington. He'd been going through a slump. This is why you hold him. He is a streaky guy, but when things are cracking, they're cracking in a pretty big way. Embiid had 22-5, while Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro started in place of Jared Bayless, who's starting in place of JJ Redick. 12 points all from 3 with 3 rebounds, 2 assists and a steal, but he is far from a high priority sort of a guy. Justin Anderson was all right in his 21 minutes. I still like Justin Anderson. I still think he can be a useful fantasy player, but finding a role on this Sixers team is going to be a tough. If for some reason he gets moved to another team and there's an opportunity, he would be someone who I would have a decent level of interest in. The next game, the Toronto Raptors and the Atlanta Hawks. Valanciunas plays well against the Hawks all the time. 24 minutes, 16-13, a steal and 3 blocks. Production is not his issue. It's getting on the court, and we have absolutely no idea how his playing time is going to roll on a game-to-game basis. I thought that he'd be in for a decent one here against the Hawks, and that's how it turned out. So that's good news, clearly. Serge Ibaka, only 24 minutes, 12-3-2, because again, just another huge ass-kicking. OG Anunoby, the Jedi, 10-5 with 2 triples, hit some threes finally, and got a block. It's almost like a miracle for Anunoby. While DeRozan and Lowry both under 30 minutes because they just did not have to play any further. So there's really very little to read into with this game. My boy Jakob Poeltl had some decent performance, or had a decent performance, 6-5 with a steal and 2 blocks in his 18 minutes. On to the Hawks, the Baptist. Here we go. 13-16 for Johnny, 26 minutes, 4 blocks. And wasn't even that efficient. He was only at 39% from the field. He was his usual 55-60%. We're talking about a potential 20-16 game with 4 blocks in under 30 minutes. He is a permanent monster. He should be owned in every league. I don't know what Budenholzer is going to do. He played like literally every player on the roster that was active and available to play and played them all at least 10 minutes. He's dicking around rotations for guys. But Collins is the guy they need to see what he can do. So he needs to be owned. He doesn't need 25 minutes a night to be a top 100 guy. He doesn't even need 24 or 20. If you give him 22 minutes a night, I think he's a top 100 guy. If you give him 27, he's a top 50 player. And that's a guy you just can't leave on the waiver wire, I don't believe anyway. Schroeder had 20-8 in his 27, while Bazemore had 13-3. Miles Plumlee continued to start and will continue to start for whatever bullshit reason Budenholzer is giving. It's ridiculous. He shouldn't start. He did have 3 blocks, so maybe I'm being harsh on Miles Plumlee, but he shouldn't start. Well, everyone is ready to just label Taurean Prince as terrible, and I understand that. Now, Mike Budenholzer was quite critical of Taurean after this game, says he benched him because he had to be smarter. He was making mistakes. He played 13 minutes and had 2 points. He's still a top 100 player for the season, and over the last month, for when he has been trash, he's still a top 130 player, averaging 11-5 with 2 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.7 blocks. There's been some rough moments in there. The last 6 games in particular have been pretty shitty. He scored in double digits once in his last 7. That was that 17-point game in the last one. It's been a real string of badness from the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. But I'm holding him. He'll get dropped in plenty of leagues, and I'd definitely look to add him. I think he'll. I don't rate Prince as a great player. I don't even think he's got great upside or anything along those lines. When the draft was done last year, I really valued Bembry as a prospect more than Prince, and we haven't seen much of Bembry at all. Prince showed a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be one of the best 4 players on a playoff team. I don't think he'll ever become that. But the opportunity is here for him this season, and while it has been reduced recently, I don't think it's going to last like this, and I do think that he should be owned. And I know many of you are going to disagree. Josh, he's trash. Get rid of him. I'm not ready to do that. I'm more stubborn than most, and I will be holding on to him despite the recent struggles that we have seen from the artist. The Undertaker, just the 18 minutes, 4-1-1 because this Miles Plumlee bullshit continues. I would much rather have Collins than Deadman. Much. Now, Deadman was really good before the injury. If you do own him, I think it's reasonable to consider him a drop. I would drop him over Prince quite comfortably, but I wouldn't be rushing to go and drop Deadman. But this looking at this sort of a box score, it makes you shit yourself for value of a lot of guys when every single dickhead on the team is playing at least 10 minutes. That is a concern for their value. The San Antonio Spurs and the Memphis Grizzlies. There was no LaMarcus Aldridge. He was resting. Manu was out as well, but Tone Parker cleared to play his first back-to-back set of the season. 21 minutes, 12, 1, and 4. Let's check on everyone's favorite waiver wire prospect, DeJounte Murray. 24 minutes, 11, 4, and 7. And I think that is a more realistic representation. Maybe the assist a little bit high, but that's a more realistic representation of what value he can potentially provide this season. Remember, at the start of the season when he was playing, he was 184th ranked player, and he wasn't getting 32 minutes a night, and that was without Parker in the rotation. This is with Parker back and no Manu, and Manu's going to come back and have an impact as well. So he's not going to be rolling out there for 30 a night. He's not going to be rolling out there and getting 7 steals a night, but he's a guy that you grab, and he's a guy that you just see what happens and see how it goes. But if he settles into a role where he averages 9 points, 5 rebounds, 3.5 assists with 1.5 steals, don't be stunned. And that's okay in certain situations, but it's not great. It's not must-own. But you grab him, you get the opportunity, you've seen the flashes, and you see how it develops. Davis Bertans had a 111 and 11, 4, and 3, replacing Aldridge, while Pau Gasol came back, played 33 minutes against his brother, and had 14, 15, and 9. That is huge from Gasol. He has been an absolute monster this season, way better than anything I could have anticipated from him. Kyle Anderson, 5-3, so piss poor in the points, but 4 steals, 2 blocks. That's where the value that's what value he brings is in those categories. And he is a guy that does have he does have value, and he should probably owned in most 12 team leagues. But we know there's a definite end to it. We just don't know where that end is. And that end is, of course, when Kawhi Leonard returns. Onto the Grizzlies. I don't know what to talk about. No Jarrell Martin, no Jim Ennis, no Chandler Parsons, no Tyreke Evans, no Jermichael Green. So the rotation's just all over the place. Andy Harrison started at point guard. We had Deontay Davis play 21 minutes. We had Mike Henry get 22. Wayne Seldon was shit in his 27 minutes in the start. Ivan Rabb made his first NBA start and had 8-6 in 17 minutes. But none of this is real. We're talking 6 rotation guys that are out, not including Mike Conley. That's how jacked up this entire rotation is. None of these injuries, apart from, say, Parsons, looks overly serious. We know his knees. Ennis should be back soon. Martin, Tyreke, Jermichael. These guys should be back pretty soon. But it's just a complete shit show. There's nothing to really benefit from unless you're in a 20-team league and you want to grab Andy Harrison or you want to take a flyer on Mike Henry. And Dylan Brooks isn't becoming a 12-team league guy. Kobe Simmons isn't. Mario Chalmers isn't. Ivan Rabb isn't. And Gasol only played the 30 minutes. Still was all right, but this is what happens when your team is just a piecemeal piece of shit, which is what the Grizzlies current rotation was, mainly because of injuries, of course. The Rockets and the Mavericks, that's 2 games with Gerald Green not in the rotation. Yes, he played 4 minutes, but he played the final 4 minutes of the game when the Rockets were up by 20. He is not a part of the rotation, so if you own him, he's done. Move on. I'd rather have Andy Harrison at this point. Jimmy Harden, 26, 5, and 13, really good. While Clint Capella was awesome in 33 minutes, 16 and 13, 2 steals and 2 blocks. Interestingly, Tariq Black replaced Nene as the backup center. Don't know if that will be an ongoing thing, but it is what happened here. 20 minutes for PJ Tucker, 22 for Ma Mute, while Chrissy Paul had 12, 7, and 4, far from his best game. And Trevor Ariza, I knew he wasn't going to be as bad as that last one. I didn't think he'd drop 23 with 5 triples, but a nice bounce-back performance from Ariza. While Ryan Anderson, this is just who he is now. Accept it. The Mavericks, Wesley Matthews, 29 and 4, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 7 triples. He was always in line for a big game here. Probably I didn't expect it to this level, but it was always a good spot. And Yogi Ferrell went well as well. 19, 4 and 4 with 4 triples in 32 minutes. Doesn't matter that he's coming off the bench. He's still getting those 30-plus starter minutes. Dennis Smith, 11, 2 and 6, a poor shooting night from Smitty, but still some good numbers. While the pencil had 10 and 5, wasn't his greatest performance there. Kleber, 2 points in 9 minutes. While Dirk, only 15 minutes. He had a gastric upset, shitting his pants, so he was not able to play in the second half. He should be fine, and he has that back-end 12-team league value with, of course, very limited upside, because we know who Dirk is at this point in his career. A legend, but not a guy that's going to contribute massively high upside value for fantasy. The Timberwolves and the Portland Trailblazers. Jim Butler out again, so Nemanja Bjelica made another start. 36 minutes for Bjelica, 9-7 with 2 steals. I think that's a more realistic representation. If Butler was going to be out long-term, that's the sort of thing I think that you can look at Bjelica and go, well, you know what, that's all right. That's sort of what he gets, but it's not 12-team worthy. One thing that is continually amazing is the fact that Karl-Anthony Towns just can't get any shot attempts. The players that had more shot attempts than Towns were Bjelica, Jeff Teague, Andy Wiggins and Jamal Crawford all took more shots than Townsie, who only had 9 field goal attempts. Now, still 16-9, but this is a bloke who should be dropping 30-9. Yeah, pretty comfortably. I don't understand the shot distribution. I don't understand having a usage of under 17%. It's really, really weird coaching. I can't really fault Wigo too much for taking 17 shots when he hit 65% of them, but Townsie hit 67% of his, so he was still, you know, good there. Well, this is just a typical Wiggins line. 24 points with 2 rebounds and 2 assists, just doing what he does with Butler out, upping the scoring and doing jack shit in the other categories, which is what has made him, you know, a really borderline guy, only averaging, say, the 17 points as opposed to 20-plus the average last season. Jamal Crawford was back, 19 points with 5 assists in 20 minutes. Shot the ball well, nothing to really see there outside of the deeper formats. For the Blazers, Dame Lillard, 31, 4 and 6 with 6 triples. Big game from him. How about the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu?
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I'd say he was good in this one. 15 and 7 with 3 triples and 2 steals. A borderline 12, a must-own 14 team league player. While McCollum had 28, 3 and 4, 5 and 4 triples. Paddy Connaughton, 12, 3 and 2 in 23. While Shabazz Napier struggled his way to 3 points in 23 minutes. And Napier is not a standard league player, despite his consistent role, as we've seen. Eddie Davis capitalized on Nurkic's injury and fouls, 11 and 10 in 25 minutes. We know that Davis is one of those guys who continually gets rebounds. He's one of the best rebound streamers out there, but minutes are going to be a concern for him. So he is, again, just that streaming option, and that's really it. The Celtics and Clippers game, some weird late news. Al Horford and Marcus Smart were both ruled out. Horford with not a concussion, but precaution from getting knocked in the head the day before. And Marcus Smart cut his hand on glass at his hotel. Now, my guess, and it's a complete guess, is that Marcus Smart punched his coffee table, a glass coffee table, put his hand through it, getting pissed off at losing the game or doing something like that, maybe being a little bit on the sauce and knocking his hand through a table and cut it open. So that, and it was weird wording. The Celtics and Brad Stevens were investigating what happened. So it definitely wasn't something innocuous. There was something weird about that Marcus Smart injury, and something will come out about that. So him and Horford were out. So that changed the rotations. Marcus Smart started next to Bainsey. 28 minutes for Morris, 15, 2, and 2. Strong 14 team league guy, but that's about it. Well, Bainsey had 12 and 6. Always puts up solid numbers when he gets that starting opportunity. While Vanilla Tice blocked 2 shots, had 2 triples, just missed the Richie Beno and had 8 and 8. Kyrie was solid in the win in the back-to-back, and Terry Rozier took advantage of Smart's absence, as he does in pretty much every situation, 15, 3, and 4. Jason Tatum also got his shot back in business, 2 of 4 from 3, truly trying to get this beard off, 18 and 6 in total, while Jaylen Brown, let's check on his free throws, 5 of 6, great, but 2 of 10 from the field for 9 and 8 with 2 steals, continues just to be as up and down as they come. On to the Clippers, DeAndre Jordan was doubtful, and next minute he was playing. 15 and 14 in 31 minutes. Also on a minutes restriction, but still played 31. Good to have him back. Well, that meant the table, Montrezl Harrell went down to 18 minutes and Will Reed only the 2. Harrell, if you grabbed him for DeAndre's absence, you can move on now. Wes Johnson, really, really strong line from Wesie here. 10, 4 and 4 with 2 steals, 4 blocks and 2 triples. And until the Rooster returns, Danilo Gallinari, then Wes is going to have that really interesting streaming value. Now, Gallinari thinks it could be 3 games before he's back, maybe 2 games, so his return is upcoming. And then when Austin Rivers comes back, it puts a further clamp on that situation. But for now, Wes is providing really, really decent numbers, really good lines, and they don't require scoring. So it's not a usage-based thing for him. It's more about just where the minutes are. In the last 2 weeks, he's the 63rd ranked player because he's hitting 2.3 triples, 0.9 steals and 1.4 blocks with 5 rebounds, and he's doing it efficiently for really the first time in his career. Never been a guy who's been an efficient shooter. Lou Williams, 20 points with 7 assists and a triple one. Blakey Griffin had 23, 5 and 3. And Ty Wallace, the list manager, 13 and 2 in 34 for Ty. Continues to play well, but of course the Roosters' return is going to significantly impact him as well. He'll move from a 30-plus minute a game guy down to a 20-minute a game guy, and then CJ Williams' return could further complicate that along with Austin Rivers. So it's been a nice little run for your 14-team leagues, maybe some deeper 12s. But it's going to end, and it's going to end pretty abruptly, I believe. All right, that is all the action from Wednesday. I am going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to shine that player spotlight onto Spencer Dinwiddie. We're going to preview the 4-game Thursday for DFS, and now I'm going to play you a song by Big School, and that song is called after dark. So I'll be back to talk DFS in a minute or two. Spotlight, and let's head up to Brooklyn and look at Spencer Dinwiddie, a very commonly requested player for the player spotlight. Dinwiddie, a player who was selected in the second round, pick 38, back in 2014. He was rehabbing a torn ACL he suffered at Colorado. He's a tall point guard. I think he's about 6'6". And he was a guy that, at the time of the draft, I remember me and Kyle McEwen doing a podcast, or maybe after the draft, talking. Maybe, no, actually, you know what it was? I think it was the Pistons season preview back for that season. And we were talking about Dinwiddie and saying that he had, yeah, a comfortable top one mustache in the NBA. Really enjoyed his mustache. And we liked the way that he played. We just hoped that he could get back. And since then, yeah, he's been cut by the Pistons. He went to the Bulls, and they inexplicably cut him, and then he signed on with Brooklyn. Now, he showed a couple of flashes last season when Lin was down, and he was sharing that time with Isaiah Whitehead. It never made sense why they shared time, because to me, Dinwiddie was always the clear, better player, but that was the way Kenny Atkinson was running things. But he's taken a big, big step forward this season. He's the 83rd ranked player in fantasy this year, Spencer, in only 28 minutes, averaging 13.5, 3.5, and 6.5, with two triples and 0.7 steals. But it's the shooting percentages which keep him down. Under 40% from the season, he's at 39.9, 81 from the line, and 34% from three for a below average true shooting percentage. The lack of steals is a concern for his overall value. So he's not a guy where I look at him and go, there's a really significantly high ceiling for Spencer. Of course, the return of D'Angelo Russell, it's going to have some sort of an impact on him. Now, what that impact is, we don't know. They say they're going to play them together. They also have Caris LeVert around there. They've got the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb. So there's four guys to fit into those minutes, unless they move on from a guy, say, like Damari Carroll, and they push Crabb up to the three. You know, someone's going to have to lose some playing time as Russell moves from his 15-minute limit up to 20, up to 25, up to 28. And I still comfortably believe that Russell is the better prospect and probably the better player. Dinwiddie's is about to turn 25 in a couple of months' time, so he's, you know, quite a bit older, you know, 4 or 5 years older than what Russell is, and we're just seeing these flashes from him now. But he's been impressive. He's been super clutch. He's hit game-winning shots. He's got a PER of 17. He's taken his box score plus-minus into the positive. His advanced numbers, they all look really strong. And his on-off stuff in his time in Brooklyn has been great. Plus 3 last year, but plus 8.1 this season. These are big, big changes for Dinwiddie. He looks more self-assured on the court. We talked about the game winners, but what he has done this season is he is driving to the rim a lot more. Last season, of his shots at the rim, 27% of them were assisted. This year, 10%. So he is taking control. He is taking the ball, and he is getting himself to the rim. That is in the top 2% of all point guards in terms of assisted percentage at the rim. So he is one of those guys creating those shots there, yeah, more than nearly everyone else in the NBA, which is, I guess, something that not many people would necessarily think. Now, his finishing could probably be a little bit better. He's only in the 61st percentile there at finishing at the rim. But what he also needs to do is he needs to improve his shot accuracy in general. 31% only on mid-range jumpers, which is not good. 35% from three is fine, but only 35% on corner three. So shooting is a concern. His playmaking, his courage, his driving, his passing, all that stuff has been much improved this season. But where does it go from here? Like, what opportunity does he have? He's on a great contract. He's got one more year at, you know, just above league minimum. for the Nets, and he fits in beautifully as a 22-minute backup point guard who can play alongside D'Angelo Russell, which might push him to 25 to 20, 26. But I think if he has another couple of strong games here and you're in a long-term dynasty league, I would explore it. I would try and see what you can get, because it has the feeling of a this is as good as it gets type situation. And sometimes I think that, and that's not always the case. But a lot of the time, like I thought that with Jordan Clarkson at the end of his rookie season, like it just doesn't get any better than what we're seeing in this stretch here. You know, Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot, I had that thought with him at the end of last season when he had that strong run in big minutes. I just get a little bit of that feeling here with Spencer. He needs to really improve that shooting to be able to force himself into a large role. The other things that have come along, but he does need to get that shooting at a much, much higher level. The mid-range stuff, his three-point shooting, everything about his shooting needs to be better. I like him. I think he's a really good player. He's been fantastic for Brooklyn. I think he'd make an excellent, probably top five backup point guard. But if you put him as a starting point guard, he's probably bottom five, bottom three, really, across the NBA, and not someone who has got significant room to grow and to become a superstar playoff type point guard or anything like that. But in terms of backups, like really, really excellent. Playing off ball, playing that, Corey Joseph, DeLon Wright, Raptors role in that 25-minute spot where you're playing multiple positions and playing alongside other point guards as well in two-point guard systems. If he can get the field goal percentage up, now this is, we're talking about his fourth season, but it's not like he's played a ton of games. He's only played 152 games over those four seasons. The first 2 years, he didn't even get to 40 games in either of those. If he can start pushing forward and getting that shooting percentage up, that would obviously help his value. It would increase his scoring, it would increase his efficiency numbers, and that would help his fantasy value. But I think he probably tops out at best in another really perfect situation as a top 50 guy, at best. And I think the chances of him getting to that are probably pretty low. But he could easily squeeze out maybe one more year of top 100 value. I love what he's done. I know his real plus minus is through the roof over on ESPN this season. But in terms of fantasy, in terms of opportunity, in terms of what it means for him, I think he's that guy that hovers around that 20 to 130. So maybe he's like a Daz Collison sort of a player, that sort of a guy who's solid enough. But when you're on a team where there is someone else there like Russell who they want to really push forward in an injury depleted third season, then that does put somewhat of a cap on Dinwiddie. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that all pans out when Russell's minutes go back up in the coming weeks and months. Let's talk perfect DFS lineups. We'll go across to FanDuel first. Freddie VanVleet at 49.9. Kyrie had 42.1. Wes Matthews 48.3. Jimmy Harden 55.5. Bojan Bogdanovic 33.9. Wes Johnson 38.8. PunchBob Shiploke at 47.2. Benny Simmons 60.4. And Andre Drummond with an absolute monster 83.8, and that cost 59,800 for a grand total of 459 points, 0.9. I don't know why I said it like that. On DraftKings, Pat Mills, 38.5. Rocket, I don't know why it says Rocket Rodney Hood, because it definitely isn't Rocket Rodney Hood. I don't know who that was supposed to be, so my apologies who that, that is really weird. I don't know what that is doing there. Is that, that's not even the right, that's the wrong lineup. I don't know why that's come up there, so I do apologize for that. I will give you, the graphic has come up incorrectly, but I will give you the perfect lineup. Just give me one sec. Apologies for that error. Fred VanVleet on DraftKings, 47.25. Wes Matthews, 50. Benny Simmons, 66.75. PunchBob Shiploke, 46.75. The Baptist had 42. Jim Harden had 58.75. Marvin Williams, 36.5, and Andre Drummond, 83, for a total of 431 points, and that cost $49,700 dues. We got four games on for Thursday. The first one of those we're going to look at is the Sacramento Kings and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 10.5. The total is 200.5 points. De'Aaron Fox, he says he was going to be right to play against the Heat after missing the second half of the last game for the Kings. And as for the Kings resting players, well, this is what I think is going to happen. I think Garrett Temple sits this one out. I think Vince Carter sits this one out. I think Georgie Hill will play. I think Costa Koufos will play. And Zach Randolph missed the last game, apparently with a sore knee. I think that was bullshit. I think Randolph will actually be back in this one as well. So my guess would be Temple and Carter out. I also guess that they'll have a different starting lineup. I don't know what it will be, but I'm almost going to assure you that it's going to be a different starting lineup for the Kings. And as such, it's really hard to rely upon so many different things that this shit show ever sort of pulls off. Goran Dragic and Tyler Johnson are both probable for Miami, so that means they're likely to play. They both have some value. At point guard here on FanDuel, Tyler is at 5,600 and Dragic is at 7,200, the iron shoulder. Both of these guys have done really well against Sacramento in the past. You know, strong, strong average. And I think both of these players, with a slight favoritism towards Johnson, are cash options and tournament options on FanDuel. As for De'Aaron Fox at 5,400, all season, if you're a point guard going up against the Heat, it's a struggle. So I think with him being just so, I guess, all over the place in general, you'd only want to use him in tournaments, and even then, I wouldn't feel good about it. George Hill, no way. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 4,900. I think he's worth a go here. Even with Tyler Johnson back, he'll still be getting 30-plus minutes because they'll pretty much eliminate Derek Jones Jr. from the rotation to get those 30 for the Duke unless they decide to run Jones out there, which I don't think they will. And then you got Budrick Hield at 5,900. He has been a really consistent source of scoring, giving you about 27, 28 most nights. I'm totally okay with that on a four-game slate. Bogdan Bogdanovic, 5,500, had been a little bit down the last couple of games with a 24 average over his last five. I still feel pretty okay, especially considering his price has dropped by $1,000. I am back on board the Bogdan Bogdanovic train. At small forward, Joshy Richardson is up to 6,700. That's probably pushing it too much for me, and I think that's a fade spot. Justice Winslow at 36 and Justin Jackson at 3,500, a small forward that you don't want any part of. At power forward, Jimmy Johnson at 5,800. With the return of Dragic and Johnson, I guess some of his ball handling does go away. But I still think at that price against this opposition, mainly, that's one of the main factors. I like him as a 40-point upside tournament guy. Probably unlikely that he gets there, but there is GPP upside in Jim Johnson. A Linux at 4,600, not really keen there. Well, Labissiere at 56. It's not a great matchup for Scal, but the way that he's playing, I feel pretty good about him going out there and exceeding that value. No interest in Zebo, of course. At center, Hassan Whiteside, 9,300. Really good numbers. 41.5 average over the last five. A super, super good matchup against the Kings. But at that price, I don't feel really locked in for him in cash. I think he can easily get you 40. But will he get me 46 or 47? I think that's probably the challenge there that leaves him as a tournament guy rather than being a cash play. Well, Willie Cauley-Stein at 7,500. I like that. He's been putting up some big numbers lately. 37-point average over the last five, had 55 in his last game. I'm totally okay with using Will Cauley-Stein there. On DraftKings, I like Whiteside again for a tournament, 8,400. More cash value than on FanDuel, but still more tournament-y. Whereas for cash, I like Cauley-Stein at 65. I like Dragic at 71. Budrick's at 5,000. Tyler Johnson's at 51. They're both really strong plays, I reckon. Bogdanovic at 49, which is a big, big dip, and Labissiere at 5,000. So a lot of cash options for this game against the Kings for DraftKings. Or not against the Kings, involving the Kings. The next game we look at, the Wizards and the Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 5, and the total is 213.5 points here. We don't know the status of Otto Porter. He left the last game with a hip strain. If he is out, of course, we're looking at Kelly Oubre Jr., who will slot into that spot and probably play large minutes there. And he would be a guy that would be really, really interested in. At point guard, Russ Westbrook, 11,900 for Russ. Probably a little bit too high. Just finding the other value plays around might be tough. But if we get some late scratch news and some like 3,800 players come into play, then using Russ is a fairly good guarantee you're going to get at least 55. I think you should feel comfortable about that. But otherwise, using him in cash might be tough to fit the right guys around him. Fatface Ray Felton's at 38. You're pretty much getting 20 a night from Felton at this point, which, again, if you just need salary relief, get 20, 22 out of Felton at 3,800. I'd chalk it up as a win. Johnny Wall at 9,500 has not been putting up the biggest numbers. He has got a good record against Russ and the Thunder, so I feel pretty okay about using him here. And again, the limited slate makes me lean a little bit more in his direction, while Brad Beal at 7,600 has been slumping himself, but this is a good opportunity, I believe, to get him back involved, especially for tournaments. Small forwards, Porter's at 6,500. I want nothing to do with that. Paulie George at 8,100. Had 40 in the last game. Another 40 is not out of the realms of possibility, and it is a decent matchup for him. So I think that he is worth looking at. Well, Oubre at 51. I'm all about Oubre even if Porter is out. But if Porter is out, then I'm even more about Oubre. I like him for cash. I like him for tournaments here. At power forward, Markieff's at 44. Look, if Porter's out, I might throw him into a tournament just because there'll be less of that Porter at the 4, Oubre at the 3 lineup, because Porter obviously won't be there, giving Markieff a little bit more minute ceiling, but otherwise probably a no. While Mike Scott at minimum salary or Jeremy Grant at 36, they're not really doing anything. If I'm taking one of them, it's probably going to be Scott, especially if Porter is gone. At center, Steve-O Adams, 7,300. That's probably just a little bit too high. The matchup's a marginal positive, but it's not a significant one, while Marcin Gortat at 4,300 has done pretty well against Adams, averaging 29 over the last three, which at 4,300, if you get 29, you're dancing in the streets. The problem is he's been an under 20-minute per game guy for the last three because he's not that good anymore. There is an opportunity against this big, burly New Zealand bloke that he might see some more playing time, so maybe you throw him into a tournament, but I think the upside is pretty bloody low for Gortat at this point. On DraftKings, for cash, I like Westbrook at 11.4. I like Johnny Wall at 8.5. That's really good, I think, that price. Paulie George at 76 and Beal at 72, as well as Oubre at 51. And most of the other chatter on those other guys is pretty similar. Mello, not bad at 6,100, but there are better options around, I believe. Let's go on to the next one. We're going to look at the New York Knicks and the Denver Nuggets. The spread is even, which is weird to me. I'd be really interested in the Nuggets, but they have struggled lately. 212.5 here. Koch missed the last game with a calf contusion, while Kristaps Porzingis. I've got him as questionable, but he thinks that he is going to play, so he's more on the probable side of questionable, while Ken Fareed is questionable for Denver, and he probably wouldn't even play if he was healthy anyway. At point guard, Jarrett Jack, 4,900, has been giving you around that level most days. There's just no upside in him, I don't think, at all for tournaments, and even the cash floor is not all that great. The Blue Arrow, love what he's been doing, but FanDuel's gone, nah, well, you can't have nice things, so we're putting him at 7,500. He dropped 52 in that last game. It is a really good matchup for him, so it makes him a strong tournament play, but it's 7,500 with Dr. Malone dicking players around at times, even including Murray, who's been really awesome lately. I find it hard to use him in cash in that spot. Ntilikina is at minimum salary because he's just not getting a run, really not caring about that, while Manny Moutier is at minimum as well, probably little interest there. Fartin Will Barton is going to start. He is at 6,500. We've also got Gaz Harris questionable too. If Barton's going to start, and if Gaz Harris is out, I'm really in on that at 6,500. I still think it's pretty good, even with Harris's status up in the air, but if Harris is out, that's all about Fartin there. Timmy Hardaway is at 5'9", and I'm in on that too. He played 35 minutes in the last game. It wasn't a great game, but still put up 22. That's not a bad floor at 5,900, and he's got 40, 45-point upside here pretty clearly. Gaz Harris at 72 is a fade, while Courtney Lee at 5,100 is limited tournament upside, but not a bad cash play. And the matchup does have a little bit of negativity towards him, so he's someone who I'm not going to be overly interested in. At small forward, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler off the bench, still played 31 minutes in the last game, but he has just been a piss poor producer most games, so I'm not really caring. While Mick Beasley at 5,900, Porzingis out, Beasley goes in your lineups in cash. Porzingis in, really, really tough, and especially at 5,900, I'd want nothing to do with it. The rest of the small forwards, it's an exercise in mediocrity. Lance Thomas, Doug McDirt, Torrey Craig, Dick Jefferson, no. Porzingis, 8,700. Looks like he's going to be fine. Looks like he's going to play. He's not really feeling like a cash guy to me. Maybe a tournament, but that's really about it. Not super invested. While Trey Lyles at 6,000. It looks like they could be going back to the the Plumlee Jokic front court, which is going to limit Lyles, so I'm not really interested in him. At center, Nick Jokic, 9,700. love Jokic. I'm not sure that that's really a cashable sort of a line. I think we're talking about a 40-point night rather than a 50-point night for Jokic, which is not quite cutting it at 9,700, but he's got 60-point upside, so you have to look at him. Or Enes Kanter at 6,200. With this uncertainty around O'Quinn, I think that Kanter can come in here comfortably and get 30 points. And I actually think that you could use him in cash in this matchup, as weird as that might sound for Enes Kanter. On DraftKings, Jokic at 8,900, I think he's a good cash play there. Farton Wilbarton at 58, the same story. The Blue Arrow at 67, not as egregiously poor as on DraftKings. Actually, really like him on I like him on DraftKings, not on FanDuel. Timmy Hardaway at 6,300 is still strong, even though the price is higher. And Jarrett Jack at 46, I think he's got some sneaky cash value there, just because of the price lowering over on DraftKings and the different scoring system working in his favor. All right, let's go to the last game now of the night. It is the Timberwolves and the Warriors. We don't know if Jim Butler's going to play, and the Warriors have listed Klay Thompson as probable with a left glute contusion and Pat McCaw as questionable with a mid-back strain. We know that Jamal Crawford will be back. We just don't know of Jim Butler's status. Of course, if Butler's out, that opens up Nemanja Bjelica as a guy we can look at. Point guard, Jeff Teague at 6,000.
My name is Jeff.
If Butler is out, I would look at it. I would use it. If Butler is in, he's more of a tournament guy. Oh, I'd probably more fade him, but I think there is tournament value in Teague if Butler is out. Tyus Jones, Sean Livingston, no, but Steph Curry, 9,900. I feel like that is a really good cash option. He's going to get you 45, it feels like, almost every time, with comfortable 60 to 70 a point upside for tournaments. At shooting guard, Clay's at 66. I don't want anything to do with Clay. He just is not really hitting the DFS numbers this year. While Andy Wiggins at 65. Butler out, Wiggins in. Very similar to Mick Beasley in New York. At 6,500, if Jim is questionable, we don't know, you obviously restrict Wiggins to just being a tournament player. At small forward, Kevin Durant, 10,500. I would rather Steph than Durant, but Durant still obviously has value in it, even more so if Jimmy Butler is out. As for Butler himself at 9,000, I'd probably fade him coming off a knee injury. Not that Tom Thibodeau is going to reduce his minutes at all, just Butler might be a little bit creaky and a little bit rusty in that spot. Bjelica's at 4,500. You know, good game against, who was it, the last time they played, I don't remember. It didn't play quite as well this time against Portland, but he would be definitely an interest in a tournament rather than necessarily a cash play at that elevated price. At power forward, Draymond at 81. I really like Draymond for cash. Maybe not so much for tournaments, but I like him for cash there. While Taj at 56 is a strong cash play also. Gorgui Jang's had some decent performances against the Warriors before. If you think that maybe there's foul trouble or issues with Gibson and they play Jang a little bit more, maybe he's a tournament guy. That wouldn't be the direction that I go with, though. And at center, of course, Towns at 9,000. Again, given the limited options that are out there, he is in play for cash, but it's not 100% his best situation. Onto DraftKings, I like Curry, I like Durant. 10-4 for Curry, 9-9 for Durant. The price is a switch there, so Curry more expensive than Durant, but I like the way that it suits both of them here. And of course, we're still looking at Bjelica if Jim Butler is out and Wigo and Jeffy T get more value in that situation as well. All right, let's now move on to those other sites for a quick rundown of some options there. On Yahoo for tournaments, Farton, Will Barton, Enes Kanter, De'Aaron Fox, Baby Neck, Wilson Chandler. There's some tournament exclusive type guys. For cash, I like Fatface Ray Felton and these other guys for tournaments and cash games. Oubre, Bogdan, Labissiere, Tyler Johnson, Budrick Hield, Paulie George, Hassan Whiteside, John Wall, and Nick Jokic. On Moneyball for tournaments, Westbrook, Jokic, Towns, Barton, Jim Johnson, Andy Wiggins. And for cash and tournaments, Oubre, Tyler Johnson, Budrick, Tim Hardaway, Kanter, Joshy Richardson, Jamal Murray, Draymond Green, Paul George, Hassan Whiteside, and Steph Curry. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Porzingis, Adams, Jeff Teague are the tournament exclusive guys. And for both types, we're looking at Oubre, Labissiere, Bogdanovic, Allington, Tyler Johnson, Budrick, Joshy Richardson, Will Cauley-Stein, Whiteside, John Wall, Nick Jokic, and Steph Curry. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. That would be a great way of supporting the show. And you can also find this show on Google Play, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube, where you can subscribe, leave a thumbs up, and leave a comment below. Check out basketballmonster.com. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Draymond Green.